And when it comes to making war, isn't it obvious how they will go about it? How? They will go on campaign together, bringing the most robust of the children with them on active service, so that, like the children of people in other skilled occupations, they can observe the occupation they will have to follow when they grow up. Besides observing, they should act as assistants and servants in everything to do with war, and be some help to their fathers and mothers. Haven't you noticed how people learn a skill? The children of potters, for example, spend a long time as assistants, watching, before they're allowed anywhere near a pot. A very long time. And are potters going to be more careful than our guardians when it comes to educating their own children, giving them the necessary experience and opportunity to observe? No, that would be ludicrous, he said. What is more, any living creature will fight better in the presence of its own young. That's true, but if they are defeated, and these things do happen in time of war, there's a very real danger, Socrates, that along with the guardians themselves, the children will be lost as well, and that this will make recovery impossible for the rest of the city. True, I said. But what is your view on that? Do you think, for instance, that the aim should be to avoid all possible risk? No. Well then, if they are going to take risks, shouldn't it be in situations where success will make them better people? Obviously. Do you think that for men who are going to be warlike it makes very little difference, and is therefore not worth the risk, whether or not they can observe the art of war as children? No, it does make a difference in the way you suggest. What we want to bring about, then, is a way of making the children observers of war, while at the same time thinking of some clever means of ensuring their safety. That would be ideal, wouldn't it? Yes. Well then, I said, for one thing, their fathers will not be without experience. They will be as expert as human beings can be at judging which campaigns are dangerous and which are not. Fair enough. So they will take them on some campaigns, but think twice about others. Yes, that'll be the right approach. And to command them, their fathers will presumably not give them those who are least able, but those well qualified by age and experience to be guides and tutors. Yes, those will be the right people. Will this be enough? I asked. After all, events are unpredictable, as all sorts of people are constantly finding out. They certainly are. So, to meet unpredictable situations, we must give them wings, my friend. From their earliest childhood. Then they can take to flight if they have to. What do you mean? We must put them on horseback at the youngest possible age. Once we have taught them to ride, we can take them as observers, mounted on horses which are not spirited and warlike, but the swiftest and most obedient we can find. In this way they can get an excellent view of what will be their occupation and still make their escape safely, if the need arises, by following guides who are older than they are. I think that's a good suggestion, he said. What about the actual fighting? I asked. Let's start with their behaviour towards each other. Anyone who out of cowardice leaves his place in the line, throws away his weapons or does anything of that sort, should be reduced to the rank of skilled worker or farmer. Shouldn't he? He certainly should. Anyone who falls alive into the hands of the enemy can be handed over as a gift to those who capture him. They can do what they like with their catch. By all means. As for someone who wins a prize for valour and distinguishes himself, don't you think that in the first place he should be crowned there in the field by the adolescents and children, every one of them in turn, who are on campaign with him? I do. How about being shaken by the hand? Yes, that too. You won't agree with my next suggestion, I don't suppose. What is it? That he should kiss, and be kissed by each of them. That above all, and I propose an amendment to this law. For the duration of the campaign, no one he wants to kiss shall be allowed to refuse. That should make anyone who is in fact in love with someone else, whether that someone is male or female, all the more determined to win a prize. Excellent, I said. After all, it has already been decided that the good man is to get more marriages than other people, and that the good should be selected more frequently than the rest, so that as many children as possible may be born to parents of this kind. Yes, we did decide that. Very well. Then we come to those killed on active service. If anyone dies after covering himself with glory, shall we not say first of all that he is a member of the golden class? We certainly shall. And shall we inquire of Apollo how we ought to bury these superhuman, these divine people, and what mark of distinction we should give them? And shall we then bury them in the way he recommends? We certainly shall. For the rest of time shall we look after their graves as those of superhumans and bow down before them. Shall we follow this same observance on the death of anyone who is judged to have been outstandingly good in his life, whether he dies from old age or any other cause? Yes, he said, that will be the right thing to do.